Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Michael Croucher. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and perhaps a glimpse into their lives. We ask them what prompts them to write and give them an opportunity to read from their work. And this week, we're very pleased to have novelist and short story writer Michael Croucher with us. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Michael Croucher came to Canada with his parents in 1953 at the age of 9. He was with the Metropolitan Toronto Police Department for 18 years and served with the Combined Forces Special Enforcement Unit investigating organized crime. His police career and his early life in post-war England have been major influences on his novels. He's always loved short stories, wrote them for decades before he took on novels at the approach of retirement. Bravo's Veil, his first novel, was published in 2012. His second novel, Diamond Run, in 2015. He's working on a third and continues to produce short stories. Award-winning writer Michael reverted to independent status in 2017. He and his wife moved to Coburg in 2014 and have two married daughters and five grandchildren. When he's not writing or spending time with family, Michael reads fiction, follows hockey, and enjoys getting to know Northumberland and Prince Edward counties. So, Michael, when did you start writing fiction, and what was the inspiration for your early stories?
Well, I started writing scribbling stories in my childhood, on foolscap, on scraps of paper, whatever was around. I'd always loved books, and if I wasn't scribbling the stories down, I was thinking them up. As I got a bit older, though, I continued to read a lot, but with school, part-time jobs, a very brief stint in the Air Force, and sports, I didn't do much in the way of writing. After I joined the police department, though, short stories, writing them became my non-sports hobby. I found it to be a nice diversion, relaxing, non-competitive. It was just me and the stories. Around 1970, I started taking creative writing courses, mainly at U of T, Ryerson, and York University. So for over 30 years, I wrote short fiction exclusively. And over that time, I belonged to several writers' groups in and around Toronto. As for the inspiration, usually it just comes from observation, watching, listening, making notes, and considering possible outcomes for certain situations that I came across. Those had always been key elements of police work, and they actually became key elements for my writing as well. And I always kept notebooks, personal and business. Police notebooks, or memo books as they call them, had to be turned in, but anything I wanted to note, or keep a note of, I wrote and used my personal book. Another inspiration, I don't use this one a lot, but I have used it with some good results, writing prompts. I remember one writers group in Toronto challenged its members with writing prompts. And one I particularly remember was, it seems strange to me, but they said, you write a story about a menu. I thought it was pretty lame, to be honest with you. But I wrote the story, I liked it, and I kept it. That menu prompt sparked a story that featured a retired single cop, a very saucy waitress, that menu, a Polaroid camera, and a very memorable date.
I bet.
Very memorable. Yeah. It will actually be in my first published collection of shorts. I don't use a lot of writing prompts, but they can provide an interesting idea for a story, even years after the fact.
Mm. Now, your crime stories. Did you start writing those while you were still in the police, or only after you retired from the police?
I only wrote short stories when I was a cop, because I didn't have time. Some of the shorts were crime-related, others weren't. In fact, most weren't. More often, the shorts are just little vignettes I built around situations and observations on and off the job. The real crime fiction, or writing novels, started many years after I'd left police work.
Now, you mentioned a collection of your short stories. Is that going to happen in the near future?
I hope by the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think are the essential components of a good short story?
Well, the first thing I think of is an interesting character, mm-hmm. a very strong character that stands out, and a character who wants something very badly. And that has to be established fairly quickly in a short story, I think, but with little detail and not much backstory either. Setting, I think, is important, but just a sense of it, scenery, building, whatever, just to help the reader get grounded in the story. Got to establish some kind of a conflict or a struggle that prevents the character from getting what he or she wants. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a short plot with very few scenes, and I think, these are my opinions anyway, mm-hmm. that move very quickly. So every word, sentence, and paragraph should move the reader along to the conclusion of the story. And there has to be some kind of message or a moral. But the most important thing for me in terms of the writing is clarity, no clutter. The story can't be clouded with flowery or unnecessary prose. So that's the way I try to write.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Now, you mentioned about setting and having grounding your reader there. Now that you're out this way and not in metropolitan Toronto, what do you think of small towns as settings for short stories?
Well, actually, I've used them before, especially in short stories. And having lived here for the last 4 years, I know I'll be using small towns more frequently. I have a couple of short stories in progress now that are actually set in smaller communities. And the novel I'm working on currently, which is the second novel in a series, has a scene set in Cobourg, believe it or not, and one in a nearby cottage area.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, I'm taking that into account.
Well, we'd love to hear one of your short stories. What is the story called?
It's called Nickel a Line. One of the first jobs I ever had was as a pin setter at a bowling alley. Now, this was before, it was in the late 1950s, before the arrival of the automatic pin setters. In that job, you needed to be fast, keep your eyes open, and this is a short piece of fiction that was inspired by my time as a pin setter. Okay, Nickel a Line. I walked along Bloor Street stewing about money, the lack of it. My car was sitting at home, its gas tank as empty as my pockets. By the time I arrived outside the Runnymede Bowl, I knew what I was going to do. Screw it, what did I have to lose? I went through the street level doors, climbed the familiar steps, and arrived at the counter. Nate looked at me through grubby glasses that he hadn't cleaned in the 2 months since I'd last seen him. A cloud of smoke drifted from a novelty ashtray that sat between us on a thick pad of score sheets. He'd won the ashtray the previous summer at the CNE Midway. It had the shape of a naked woman on her back, her hard-knit boobs poking through the loose heaps of ash. A soggy-ended hand roll rested in her cleavage. I think it was Nate's pride and joy. I looked around the alleys. Hey, Nate, you're getting busy. Any chance of me grabbing a few lines? I never thought I'd see you back here, Mick. You've been gone a long while. I nodded, but kept my mouth shut. I'd started caddying at a golf club about 9 weeks back. I liked being outdoors, and with the per-round rates and tips, I was making better money there. But it was late fall and turning cold. The number of rounds I got for a week had really dropped. On top of that, Dad had been laid off. He couldn't help me with the spending money, and I needed to pitch in for the family. So here I was, looking to set pins. Nate threaded fresh laces into a pair of men's number 10s. A piece of tobacco flew off his tongue. Still 5 cents a line. Whoever said I was paying 10 is full of shit. But I'll give you another chance, Mick. I could use it tonight. 5-pin industrial leagues are in, and you're faster than the kids I've got now. He looked up again. No screwing off, though. You get a single 2-minute break. None of this 10-minute bullshit, or I'll take you off the roster for good. Go down to lanes 3 and 4. The hot shots from Viceroy and Canada Packers are starting soon. Nate and I had never hit it off. I'd actually got into a few shouting matches with him. The last and loudest was when he'd fudged my line counts on another league night. I was glad he was giving me the alleys now, but I knew he would have me on a tight leash. No sweat, Nate. I was in the perch just as they started. When the first ball cracked in, it sent all the pins on lane 4 flying. One of them whacked the side of my shin. I wasn't tucked in the foot shield properly. That stung. I knew it would leave a nice bruise. I shook it off, jumped into the pit, grabbed up the pins, 3 in my left and 2 in my right. I tapped my foot down on the lever, set up the pins on their mounts, and sent the ball back before Buddy Boy at the other end had finished his fist pumps. No problem. I was as fast as ever. 4 frames in, I was starting to feel relaxed, into the rhythm, and swinging between my alleys like I'd never left. The pins were set quickly after each frame. I was keeping the guys happy. The snack bar at the alley was a local hangout. I took a peek over to see who was around. Only a few people at the counter, and nobody that I knew, except for a couple of pin boys having a soda between lines. Then I checked around the open lanes to see who down at the far end. Between 14 and 15, I saw 2 familiar faces. Son of a bitch, there's Pam. And is that who I think it is? Yeah, it is. Well, there's no friggin' way this is happening. I'd left her an hour ago at Castle Burgers. She didn't know I was coming here. I hadn't really planned on it until I took my walk. What the hell is she doing with Bobby Rooney? And Jesus, he's all over her, really coming on. I'd seen Ronnie doing his thing 2 weeks ago at the Palais. Saw him slow dancing with Gail Jennings. They were practically doing it with their clothes on. He was really grinding it, and now that slug's with Pam? I watched him put his arm around her and steer her towards the front doors. Shit, they're leaving. I yelled over the clatter of pins and the rumble of balls. Break on 3 and 4, I yelled. No response. I barked my request again. Eventually, another pin boy, Jim Barrett, headed over from the snack bar. I flew by him on the median between lanes and ran towards the doors and the stairs down to Blur Street. Nate saw me coming and tried to cut me off. He didn't make it and yelled down the stairs at my back. Mick, where the hell are you going? The can's up here, for Christ's sake, and you just got here, damn it. I ignored him. No more lines for you, Mick, he said, and don't try up at the junction bowl either. I'm letting them know what an asshole you are. I headed west towards the Trocadero. It was dance night. My mind was racing, my fists were clenched, and I was going to stop this and quick. There's no way, Rooney. Not a chance. Not with her, you piece of crap. Not with my little sister.
Oh. Well, thank you, Michael. We've been talking with Michael Croucher, short story writer and novelist, and we'll chat again after we take this short break.